Welcome to the Currently Cringing podcast. I'm your host, Anisha Ramakrishna. I'm a TV personality and entrepreneur. Join me as I spill the chai on my cringeworthy life experiences with a side of dating, pop culture, and lots of laughs.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey guys, welcome to Currently Cringing. Happy International Women's Day. I am proud to be a woman. I love being a woman, and I love all the girlies in my community because, you know, my content is and for women. Although we still have a long way to go as a society, and me being a person of color and female, you know, sometimes we're at the bottom of the totem pole, but, you know, we keep on trucking. We keep going. It's also Shivratri, Mahashivratri, which is the Indian festival of the Lord Shiva. And like many other Indian holidays, festivals, and religious days, it's basically overcoming darkness, negativity. It's a day where you celebrate the Lord Shiva if you're a practicing Hindu. And there was a delay with uploading this episode. Not because I wasn't well, which has been the case in the past, last year, but I'm, you know, taking a lot of good supplements. I'm taking care of my health. I'm cooking most of my food at home, even the bad things like making Rice Krispies treats, donuts, pizza instead of buying it. So at least I know what goes into it. So my health has been pretty good, knock on wood. But the reason there was a delay is because I tried out this new deepfake AI and I uploaded my photos of my face and me. I uploaded a 2-minute recording from a previous episode on the podcast so that the AI would know my voice. And finally, I uploaded the script. And when I record this podcast, I write down key points. It's not a script. I just write down the key points. But I wrote down a little script and what I would like to go over just because, you know, the AI can't just go off of key points. It needs an actual script. And I used a software called Descript. This thing scared the shit out of me. The way it read this entire script, like I was recording the pod, was mind-blowing, terrifying, insane, and incredible all at the same time. I am one of the few people, I think, that is excited for what this technology can do, AI in every field, because I think it's just going to make us more efficient. Now, in terms of, you know, the robots taking over and intellectual property and cloning people and information, all of that stuff, yes, that is bad. But I was amazed. And so I was thinking about it, like, should I upload that episode? But the issue with that AI voice cloned podcast episode was that a lot of Indian words were mispronounced. So today's episode is going to be about the Ambanis, the Ambani family. I'm going to do a whole deep dive. And, you know, for example, it said the Ambanis or Gujarat instead of Gujarat, which is a state in India, which is where they're from. However, there was a tool in Descript to highlight a word, re-record it in your voice, and it would pronounce it properly. And I was just like, okay, this is next level, but let's just record this. Like, this is a sign in English. Like, just record the pod and let's use the AI maybe for something else. But it was just incredible to see, because I like to talk off the cuff on this pod. Like, I have my key points, my bullet points, but we're just talking, right? Like, we're not reading a script. And so my friends actually advised me. They were like, don't upload the AI podcast. And you guys would have probably known, because sometimes the emotions were off. Like, when there was sarcasm, it would just be like, right, instead of right. But my mind is blown. I don't know where we're heading as a society, but this is some pretty cool stuff if used properly by the right people. And I think part of what makes the listeners and me enjoy this is it is off the cuff. We're not reading a script. So that happened, which is why there was a delay, because, you know, I was debating, do I upload that episode or should I just record this whole thing from scratch? And that's what we're doing. We're recording from scratch. Live in real time. It's not a script. It's not an AI voice. It's me. In other news, the self-help guru, Jay Shetty, he's a fellow brown dude, Indian. Apparently they're claiming that he wasn't a monk or that he doesn't really have a degree in behavioral science. I'm going to say this, okay? The guy interviewed President Biden, Michelle Obama. The guy helps people. Like, maybe they're saying he's a con artist, but what has he done wrong? How has he misled people? Did I get the best vibes from him? No. If he invited me on his podcast, would I be there? Absolutely. In full glam. Posting new best friends, new BFF. Like, yes, I would be there. But the point I'm making is, okay, maybe he fibbed. Maybe he lied. Haven't we been over this? This happens time and time again. You guys are the gullible ones, and not my listeners, and not my audience or my community, not the girlies in my crew, but some of y'all out there, like, you know, you believe a lot of things. But okay, maybe he didn't have a master's degree, but you know what he did do? He helped a lot of people. So that's my takeaway from the whole thing. The guy's helping people and doing more than most. And hey, he made this a business. He made it an opportunity and he took it and ran with it. I mean, he's had Kim K on his podcast. Like, you can't knock the guy, okay? Maybe he lied, but I think everyone lies. Everyone's a fucking liar in that field. The self-help field, they're all fucking lying. He was selling courses, and apparently the courses were like, you can be a life coach too. But like, you should know that you can't probably be a life coach. I know I can't be a life coach. You know, I'd probably like yell at you. And he probably took advantage of some people, you know, made them buy the course. But he's so big now that whatever he's done, he obviously pissed someone off, the Illuminati, someone, where now they're like attacking him out of the blue. Because those who know, like, if you know, you know, like, we've all known this shit for years. This is nothing new, you know? But I wonder what he did. He clearly pissed someone off, just like Diddy was doing horrible things, but everyone was keeping quiet. Who did he piss off that now everything's out into the open? I mean, we're acting like we never knew any of this nonsense. Like, when you know, when you follow celebrity culture and you have good intuition, like, you kind of know, like, all of these people are like scheming and scamming. And speaking of scheming and scamming and who knows what's actually going on, the royal family, like, Kate Middleton's been missing. Like, we haven't seen this woman since this year. I don't know. Maybe she did like a full body lift, facelift, boob lift, you know, maybe full body reconstruction, like mommy makeover. She didn't need it. The woman was like a supermodel. But you know, you never know. Like, I don't know. I don't know where she is. Apparently she had abdominal surgery. Then we hear Prince Charles has cancer. And so, you know, we don't know what's actually happening there. If anyone knows, there's any sleuth in this community, like, let us know. If you're in London or in the UK, spill the chai. A And for those of you in Canada, my Toronto peeps, my Toronto fam, you know, I'm performing at the Royal Theatre on April 18th, Thursday at 7 p.m. It's going to be an incredible show, an hour and a half, and then the last half hour is meet and greets. So I'd love to see you there. Come out on Thursday, April 18th in Toronto. And now we begin the deep dive. The whole point of today's episode is, you know, to deep dive into the empire, the glitz, the drama, the unbelievable opulence. Yes, you guessed it. The Ambani dynasty, the Ambani family. Buckle up because this is going to be a wild ride from humble beginnings to high-rise controversies and weddings that might just make the royals look, well, you know, homeless. So I hope you're sitting down somewhere comfortable in a nice, plush, cozy blanket. And maybe you've got a cup of hot chai or some green tea or some chamomile for nighttime, or, you know, a glass of champs, a glass of wine, perhaps. Or if you're me these days, some kombucha. And so I've never done a deep dive like this where it's going to sound like I'm reading you a story and we're going off the cuff and reading a little bit of some notes, which was what the AI did. And so let me know if you like this format and I can incorporate it more into future episodes when I do deep dives or story times. We can do it this way if you like it. I'd love your feedback after you're done listening to this. It would mean a lot. And so let's begin. So this story begins with Dhirubhai Ambani. He's the patriarch of the family. So he's born on December 28th, 1932 in Chorwad, Gujarat. Gujarat is a state in India. And he wasn't your average Joe. Imagine a small village where everyone knows your name, your dad's a school teacher. And that's where this whole story begins. So he grows up in this village. He's the third of five siblings. And they're living in this small space and they're learning the value of hard work. They didn't have much. Times were tough. And Dhirubhai's just got these big dreams. And that's where this is really critical, guys. And me and you should implement this too, right? Like, he was in a village, but this guy's head was somewhere else. And just like you or me right now, we may not be where we want to be in life at this very moment, but mentally, you need to be there. And that's how you get things done. And that's how you get to your destination or where you want to go or reach your goals, you know, by mentally already being there. Acting as if that person who's already got those things that you want. And that's what this guy did when he was a kid. He started when he was a kid, you know, just believing in himself and wanting more and working towards it and just having that mental delusion. You know, the kids call it Delulu is the Salulu. That's what they're saying these days on TikTok. And I get it. You know, he's not thinking, I'm in this village. I hate my life. This sucks. I'm sure he had a few days where those thoughts did cross his mind. But no, he was like, I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to make it. I don't care what my circumstances are. I'm going to make shit happen for myself. His dad's a trader, not making much. And when Dhirubhai's a teenager, he's like, you know what? I'm going to get the fuck out of here. And there's a job in Aden. Now, when I read this, I thought the same thing you're thinking. Where the fuck is Aden? And then I Googled it and it's Yemen. And I know where that is, but I know some of you are like, where the fuck is that? It's in Africa. And he went there with the intention of like, I'm going to be rich. Like, I'm going to go to Yemen. I got this opportunity to get out and I'm going to go to Yemen and make money. And he gets to Yemen and he's a gas station attendant, like filling gas. Because, you know, in a lot of these countries like India, third world countries, people fill gas for you, like they do in New Jersey. I guess New Jersey could be considered third world. Who knows? So he's filling gas for a few years. And then he's like, you know what? Like, I deserve more. And so he moves up and he becomes a clerk. He takes an office job for the same oil company, which I believe was Shell at the time. And, you know, he realized while he was a clerk that there's a discrepancy in the exchange rate. So he does a little bit of arbitrage and he makes like $3,000, which back then in the 1950s, $3,000, you know, that's like what, $100,000? And for those of you that don't know what arbitrage is, it's basically the price difference of the same commodity, and that commodity could be cash, stocks, cattle, whatever you want to call a thing, right? A thing. A commodity is a thing. So in modern day terms, it's those people that buy the discounted shit at Walmart. Like they find those cheap deals where it's like a case of Irish Spring. They find it for like 69 cents and then they sell it on Amazon for like $2. They're making money because they found a loophole. They found a deal. I hope that made sense to you. It's they found a cheaper price for a same product that's available in every store, but they found a deal on the low and now they're selling it and making money. So he makes his $3,000 and he's like, you know what? I'm going to start a business now, my own business, and I'm going to go back to Bombay. And in those days and in today's times, Bombay is like the big city. It's like the Big Apple, right? Everyone in America, when they think of New York, it's like you think of dreams, empires. That's where you go to make it. Same as Mumbai in India. You go to Bombay to make it. Whether you want to be in business or Bollywood, it's like where dreams happen. And I said this in my earlier podcast, you know, if you really want to make it in life and you're not from a rich family or you're in a small town and you want to get out and you have no experience, you really have to live in a big city. That's where you learn, you know, the loopholes and the trade and how to talk to people. And now, you know, we're kind of living in a global world. Everything's online. You can learn the same thing anywhere. But probably the best, most intelligent people on the planet, and this is just a fact, you know, the billionaires, the wealthy people, I don't know if they're intelligent, but like the people who are the most successful, they're living in the big cities. And if you're in the come up, then you should probably live in a big city, learn whatever you need to do, and then go back to your small town or small city and, you know, start your own thing. So he goes back to Bombay. And he creates Reliance Commercial Corporation. And they're importing, they're kind of like a trade company. So they're importing polyester, spices. And he does so well, instead of importing, he now switches to producing. He opens up his own textile mill in a town outside of Ahmedabad, which again is in Gujarat. So now we're back to his home state. We've left Maharashtra, Mumbai, Bombay. We're back now to Gujarat. So keep up with me now. He was born in 1928. He left to Yemen, Aden, Yemen in his teenage years. And then he moves back to Bombay in 1958. And now it's 1966. And he's building his first textile mill and producing fabric on his own. And he's doing really well. And he's like, you know what? I want to build more textile mills and I want to expand. And he was so ahead of his time. Instead of going to the banking system, a bank, and asking for a loan and all that, he goes to the stock exchange, the Bombay Stock Exchange, and had kind of like the first IPOs, initial public offerings, in India. And so what is an IPO? For those of you that don't know, an IPO, an initial public offering, it's when a private company goes public, meaning they list themselves in some sort of stock exchange, and it's now owned by the public. So Apple, Disney, all these companies are owned by the public. And who is the public? Shareholders, investors. They're buying shares to own a part of this company. And then in turn, you're using that money and hopefully doing the right thing and reinvesting your shareholder investor money to make more money by growing your business and expanding. And if you're lucky and you're friends with someone who's starting a business and you really believe in them and you give them some of that startup money and then you own equity in their private company and they have an IPO and blow up and you make a lot of money, that's the dream. And he also gave his employees ownership. You hear this all the time. What are the company's benefits, stock benefits, equity? He gave his employees shares in his company. And you don't know where this company is going to go. Like, you don't know. The guy's just starting out. But his employees had faith in him. And they eventually became millionaires. And I was reading a lot about this. And Ambani, Dhirubhai Ambani, he respected and loved his employees. You know, I'm reading about that. Like he really valued them. And so things are going great. And now it's 1982 and he's doing so well. He's like, you know what? I'm also going to diversify my business. I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket and make textiles. I'm going to start investing in chemicals and gas and power and telecom and plastics. And by this time, he also had a lot of enemies, or what we call haters, you know, like they were bitter. They were trying to do a lot of things, you know, like creating import tariffs, offering lower prices than him to undercut him, to take part of his business. But he kept thriving. This guy kept thriving. And he begins spreading education throughout India in addition to all of this. You know, he started creating programs for the poor to have computer education and training for thousands of students, like in the poor villages. He comes up with this quote that really resonates with me, and I think you guys will love it too. There is no monopoly on ideas. No one can control or take your ideas. Ideas are endless, limitless. So now every epic billionaire family needs some family drama, right? Like Succession in real life. So he has two sons with his wife, Kokila Ben, who he actually met in Yemen. They were in school in Yemen. And a lot of Indians, a lot of people don't know this, went to Africa, you know, to pursue business. So there's a lot of Indians in Africa, because you're probably thinking, like, why were they in Yemen? A lot of Indians went to a lot of different places all over the world to make money. And India was, you know, owned by the British. So Yemen was also a British colony at the time. So they were able to, like, go to all these places and get work. And Kokila Ben is actually the largest shareholder of Reliance Group, which is what the Ambani family company is called today. She's the largest shareholder to this day. So they get married and they give birth to Mukesh, the older son, in 1957, and Anil, the younger son, in 1959. So they kind of grew up in the struggle. They were living in a one-bedroom apartment with nine other people, like their family members. And then they see their dad come up and now they're inspired and they want to, you know, work hard and, you know, make their dad proud. So now the dad's doing well and the kids are like, you know what? We want to study in America. So Mukesh Ambani actually goes to Stanford. He has an MBA from Stanford, but he didn't finish because his dad was like, I need your help. You need to come back to India. And so he was bummed, like any of us would be. And he cut his education short at Stanford and went back to India to help his dad with the plant. And his brother, Anil Ambani, is from Wharton, the University of Pennsylvania. And he was able to finish, you know, because the younger ones always get to do it. The older ones have to pay the price. So they both go back to help their dad. They're really in the thick of things. They're in the trenches. They're growing the business with their dad. And they each get married. So Nita Ambani is also Gujarati, from the state of Gujarat. And she grew up middle class in Mumbai. And she's a trained Indian classical dancer and was a teacher. They get married in 1985 and she's practicing teaching, you know, for a few years. And then they start making a lot of money. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to start, you know, doing a service for the country. And she starts helping people and, you know, feeding the poor and getting into charity, philanthropy. Now, the flashier son, the younger son, Anil, meets Tina Munim, who at the time is a movie star. So think like Goldie Hawn, right? Like she's stunning. And they get married in 1991.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And you already see the stark difference, right? Like you have Nita Ambani, like humble beginnings, teacher, and then you have Tina Munim, like this movie star. They're all living together in an apartment, all of them, like the daughter-in-laws, like everybody. And now there's some funny business. People are trying to take him out. Dhirubhai Ambani, they're like, how can someone who was selling like yarn a couple of years ago make so much money? And it turns out that a large investor who was not in India, an NRI, a non-resident Indian, had given a lot of money as a shareholder, had bought a lot of shares. And this was the reason why he had so much money to invest and grow his company. And things are going great. And his company called Reliance, you know, is being run by the sons. They're handling different divisions. And then he starts, you know, having health issues. He had a stroke. The dad, he's not doing well. And eventually he passes away in 2002. Now, this is where shit gets real. For whatever reason, he did not leave a will. He did not leave a will. So no one knows what's happening, which is mind-blowing. So the dad passes away, and Mukesh, the older son, becomes chairman and managing director of Reliance, and the younger son, Anil, becomes vice chairman. So they're kind of like co-CEOs. Now, there's always three sides to a story, and this is just what is speculated on the internet. Because, of course, that's where we get all our information from. Like, do I know an Ambani? I should. I fucking should. But I don't. And so I can't verify. But this is, you know, based off some research that I did. So the brothers now own 46% of Reliance. 13% is owned by shareholders. And then 22% is owned by foreign institutional investors. So they start fighting, like, who gets what part? Because now you remember, they have oil, gas, petrochemicals, plastics, fabric. Like, they've got a lot of shit, you know? And they have to divvy it up. And the mother, Kokila Ben, intervenes and splits Reliance into two companies. And each brother gets different divisions of the companies. But now they start competing with each other. So in 2006, Anil starts fighting with Mukesh about gas contracts. And the issue was Mukesh's company was supposed to sell gas to Anil's power company at a reduced rate. But the government didn't approve the deal. And then Anil was like, that's because you did some shit with the government behind my back. And so Anil sues his brother now in 2008 and accuses his brother of having secret, covert government dealings about fixing the price of these gas contracts to screw him over. And Anil's like, why is the government, you know, doing this behind my back with my brother? And he makes this whole private family thing, this whole public spectacle. And one thing brown families hate is public spectacles, which is why people lost their shit when we did Family Karma. Because, of course, I have to throw myself into the story. And so Mukesh is like, okay, you're going to talk shit. You're going to put our dirty laundry out there. Well, guess what? I'm going to call the fucking New York Times. And while this is all happening, their stocks are tumbling. Prices are dropping because the public is like, what the fuck is going on with this family? This lunatic family, like what's happening? So now Mukesh is like calling New York Times, like modern day TMZ. And back then, you know, the New York Times was like a big deal. Now, if you told me, you know, New York Times, I'd be like, okay, TMZ, how the mighty have fallen. You know, what the New York Times was and is two different things. So he's talking to the New York Times like, you know what? Yeah, me and my brother were fighting. You know, it sucks, but, you know, it's a family matter. And then things get really spicy when a deal for Anil's company falls through because Anil's company is apparently purposefully doing power cuts, like turning off the power, the electricity for Anil's companies. And now they're all having meetings and going to parties and events, but they're not talking to each other. They're living in the same apartment building and they're not talking to each other. And people, you know, the country, everyone's really bummed because apparently they would finish each other's sentences. You know, they were really close, but it just shows you what money and no will and a lot of other shit can do. You know, you could be the closest of relatives, siblings, and, you know, money changes things. And so now it's 2009 and Anil is almost assassinated. And he didn't directly blame his brother, but someone put like pebbles and mud in his helicopter gearbox, which was like tampering with the helicopter, and he almost died. And they also have kids, you know, Anil, he has two sons named Anmol and Anshul, and Mukesh, who we've seen with these extraordinary, lavish, incredible weddings, he's got three kids, Akash, Isha, and Anant. Anant is the one who we just saw had his pre-wedding bash with Rihanna and all that hoopla in Jamnagar. And now things are getting really heated to the point where Anil Ambani starts placing ads, like daily advertisements, in the Times of India newspaper, talking about how his brother and the government are fighting against him. The government is like, can you guys please stop fighting because you're ruining the stock market? You're affecting the economy. Imagine. The finance minister at the time is quoted to have said, this dispute has become a matter of national interest. Can you imagine you're like fighting with your sibling and the government's like, can you stop because you're worth so much? Your fight is ruining the economy. Like the public, we don't have faith in you because you guys are fighting, and so we don't want to invest. And so they take it to court. They take it to the Supreme Court in India, and the court rules in favor of Mukesh, and the mom creates this like peace agreement between the two brothers, and Anil, you know, drops his case. And at this point in time, Anil is actually richer than his older brother Mukesh. And the statement wealthy is all relative in this, like wealthier. I mean, they're still worth multiples of billions. They're all still in the Forbes like top 20 at this point in time in 2008. They're both still worth billions. It really doesn't matter who had more. They all had millions, both parties. But now in some Pandora papers that are released, apparently Anil kind of overleveraged himself. So he had too many loans that he had to pay off that he couldn't. And Mukesh came in and kind of saved the day and like paid off all his debts. And Anil had to file for bankruptcy. So you go from like being on the Forbes list to then your brother bailing you out and you're filing for bankruptcy. And because they owed so much money, Anil, he had to just sell off his business for like, you know, nothing. It was like a fire sale. Like they're just trying to get rid of it at that point, you know? Apparently he made bad business decisions, bad investment decisions, but they get past it and Anil's bankrupt. But, you know, bankrupt in these people's terms, like not really bankrupt, but, you know, they had to get rid of his business, sell it off. And this is now 2010 when Mukesh Ambani starts building Antilia. So it's like, what is Antilia? And I remember this as clear as day because we were just shook as Indians. You know, if you've been to India, poor people are everywhere. There's homeless people, beggars, children. It is astonishing the amount of homeless people in India. People complain about the homeless situation in America. Go to India. And Antilia is the $4.6 billion private residence of Mukesh Ambani and his family. It's 27 stories, 568 feet tall, and I think it's 65,000 square feet. And it's got a 168-car garage, a ballroom, 9 elevators, 50-seat movie theaters, terraces, gardens, swimming pool, spa, health centers, a temple, gym, a snow room that spits out snowflakes from the walls. Like, just Google this thing. You can look it up. And it's actually doubled in value from when he built it to today. So he started building it in 2010, and it was completed in 2013. And now 10 years later, last year, 2023, it has doubled in value. And I think the chaos when they were building this, I remember, was that they built this home on what was an orphanage. And it's surrounded by the slum, and it faces a slum. And you gotta wonder, you know, like, who would need a house this big? But, you know, they've got money to blow. And they hired two US-based architecture firms, Perkins and Will in Chicago, and Hirsch Bedner from Los Angeles. And they loved the Mandarin Oriental New York. And so they hired these people because they built that. And they're like, we want our house to look like that. I mean, the things you do with money. So it cost him $2 billion to build. And now the thing's worth $4.6 billion. And even other people in the business community, other billionaires, you know, in India were like, this is just a lack of empathy, like building this monstrosity of a building in an area that's just surrounded by homeless people. And that's India. You know, there's homeless people everywhere you go. It doesn't matter where you are. You can be in the Beverly Hills of India and there's homeless people there. They're everywhere because, you know, it's the largest country in the world. There's too many people. And I think that's going to change. We talked about that in a previous podcast. I think India is headed for big things. By 2028, we're going to see a whole different story. I'm really excited for that as an Indian. But there were so many other things that they could have done with $2 billion. But, you know, they decided to build this home and it's their money. Meanwhile, Anil Ambani lives in a mansion, you know, a nice house. It's 16,000 square feet, still big, in the Pali Hill neighborhood of Mumbai, which is in the hills. And that's actually where Chitra, Queen Chitra, my mom, that's where she grew up. That's where grandpa was. And Anil Ambani's house is 17 stories, but, you know, I don't think it costs $2 billion. What's nice, though, is the kids are all friends. The cousins are all friends. And in fact, a big part of why the brothers are on good terms is because of the kids. The kids are all talking and really love each other. And all the kids are actually working together in the new business now, which is pretty incredible. The kids are kind of taking over. And they're united. So that's kind of, you know, the Ambani legacy. But now let's get into these weddings. You know, what we saw was the last big Ambani wedding, you know, from Mukesh's side, right? There's Mukesh and Anil, the brothers. Remember, Anil has two sons and Mukesh has three kids. So this was the last child for Mukesh to get married, the youngest one, Anant. And so let's start with the older Ambani's son's wedding, Mukesh Ambani's son, Akash, right? He gets married at 28 to Shloka Mehta. Now her family is like a big diamond family. They own like diamonds. And they decide they want to have Coldplay sing at their wedding. And they love Switzerland. And so they get married in St. Moritz, which is wild. Like I would have loved to have gone to that one. Can you imagine? And the trend I noticed is that they all get married at 28. They've all been married at 28. So, you know, maybe that's like the age to get married for these billionaires. And, you know, they're all matched up in advance. Okay. They're not like going to college to find the love of their life. No, they're kind of like in these little circles with other billionaires and wealthy people. And they got to pick from that pool. You know, the parents aren't like, yeah, go marry a commoner. Like, no, it's all business. It's all money. And I'm sure they love each other, these couples, but you know, it's about the money and the legacy. And I get it. And Isha, the middle, she gets married in Antalya, their massive residence in Mumbai. And she decides she wants Beyonce to sing at her wedding. And she marries Anand Piramal, and they own a bunch of businesses too. Like they're a big conglomerate, just like Reliance. You know, they have businesses in pharma, financial, real estate, glass, you name it, they're doing it too. So it's like these two families just merging, right? And then finally, Anant Ambani, who's now 28, had his pre-wedding party with all the Bollywood stars and everyone and their mother and Rihanna in Jamnagar. And Jamnagar is a small town in Gujarat. And I'm sure the people of Jamnagar were put to work and got jobs in a good way. You know, they created employment for this village to really create this wedding. I mean, did you see this wedding? Like the sets? There's nothing there. So everything was built from scratch and like brought over from all over the world to this tiny village in India, in Gujarat. And so Anant and Radhika, they're family friends, and they met 10 years ago and, you know, had crushes on each other. And her family now owns Encore Healthcare, and it's like a big pharma company, healthcare company. And I think her family is worth like $100 million. So it's like for them, you know, the Ambanis, they're like, okay, well, that's great. That's like $10. But, you know, for the rest of us, it's like, okay, she's rich, rich too. And I know there's been a lot of talk about his weight, Anand's weight, and how is she with him and blah, blah, blah. First of all, he's not looking at you or me. So it doesn't matter how she's with him. Okay? Because he's not even looking at us. So to the people that are like, oh my God, like, I don't get it. Like, you don't have to get it, hun. He's not looking at you. It's not your problem to have to worry about this. Don't worry. It's not an option for you to marry him. And he's not marrying you. So you don't have to concern yourself with that. Second of all, apparently he has had a lot of issues with asthma. And so the steroid medication has created this weight gain. Now, none of it is our business, bottom line. And so I wish him the best. I hope they're happy. And I hope, you know, they're together forever. She looks like she's on cloud nine. She is so happy in every video, every photo. You just see this genuine love and happiness from her. You know, he seems kind of shy and like, you know, he's probably like, what are people thinking? But she just seems so over the moon. And she's stunning, and she really has this positive aura to her. I get really good vibes from all of them, quite frankly. But the wedding cost $150 million. $9 million of that went to Riri, and she did pronounce the name wrong. The bride's name is Radhika, and she said Radhaki. I don't know. You know, for $9 million, you could have gotten it right. But, you know, it is what it is. Tomato, tomato. And so they chose Jamnagar because it's where Dhirubhai's wife, Mukesh and Anil's mom, Kokilaben, was born. She was born in Jamnagar, and it's where Dhirubhai founded Reliance, the company. So it's a special place, and Anant loves animals, and so he's created this whole animal sanctuary there. And they wanted to honor their heritage. So you've got all these Bollywood stars being flown in on private jets, and then Rihanna coming in, and then you've got Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Ivanka Trump, Carly Kloss, and Jared Kushner were there. And I would have loved to have been there. I think we all would have loved to have been there. I mean, our entire lives were consumed for the past 72 hours last weekend when we were watching all of this unfold. And then today I wake up and I see more Jamnagar content and I'm like, wait, this shit's over. No, it's over when they say it's over, bitch. They are now flying in the Bollywood stars once again to perform a special concert for all the employees and workers of Jamnagar who made the wedding happen, like who literally built the village for the wedding, which I think is incredible. Like, because in India, Bollywood is like everyone's escape, right? So let's say you live in the slum, but you know what the latest Bollywood movie is and what the latest Bollywood songs are and who the top Bollywood stars are. Like, you know, it's in our blood. We are obsessed with entertainment in India. And so to give those employees that treat, I'm sure they got paid well too, and they've probably built great homes for them, you know, versus living in the big city in Mumbai where they're struggling. They probably gave them like jobs in Jamnagar to have something to do. They're probably living a decent life in Jamnagar. And, you know, then they get to see these Bollywood stars in a private concert. Like, I'm sure it's one of those towns where, like, the entire town works for them. It's like the Walmart family, right? Walmart's headquartered in Bentonville, Arkansas. Like, what do you do there? But guess what? The people of Bentonville, Arkansas are probably doing well. They're probably thankful to the Walton family for keeping the headquarters there and giving the town, you know, these jobs and something to do. It's like kind of the same thing, like Bentonville's like Jamnagar. But I think it also showed you like what money can buy. Money can buy Rihanna to sing in your backyard. Money can get Rihanna to come perform in your living room on your wedding day. And as Indians, you know, we're proud. You know, I'm not one of those Indians that's like, oh, like, where's the money being used? Like, why are they doing this? Like, no, it makes us proud because we've had such humble beginnings as Indians, as a country, India. Like, we've all had the struggle, you know? India was not a wealthy country. We may have a rich history and heritage and have a lot of beautiful things in our culture, but to now move into the next phase where India is going to become a superpower by 2028, you know, and Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, everyone is investing in India. The future is India and in China as well, whether you like it or not. You know, the future is happening in these places. And so the Ambanis, they've shown us, you know, the power of your dreams. It's a true entrepreneurial story. The guy, Dhirubhai, was born in a village. And look at where they are now, you know, the legacy. And we've seen their ups and downs, their complexities as a family, the feud between the brothers, and now everything's good. They've shown us how to throw a party that the world will never forget. But I think the takeaway is that message of hope, right? That anything is possible. And I guess for the Bollywood stars, my question is, are they paid to perform or do they have to go because they were summoned? You know, how does it work with that? Like now where you've got billionaires calling the shots and yeah, they'll pay Rihanna, but hey, you're a Bollywood star. They literally invited all of them. Like, are they coming to dance for free? And if they don't come and dance, do they get consequences? Do they not get certain roles in movies? We'll never know. My guess is hopefully they're getting paid. Because they just flew back there again today for the corporate concert. But I've thoroughly enjoyed it as an Indian. I'm really proud. And I hope you found, you know, their story as interesting as I did. Thank you for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thank you so much for sipping the chai with me this week. If you like the show, remember to rate, review, and subscribe. You can also find me on Instagram at Anish Ramakrishna. I would love to hear from you. Join me next week for more chai.